Darkness is not an affirmative force. It simply reoccupies the space vacated by the light.
This is the Hamilton Corner on American Family Radio.
It should be uncomfortable for a believer to live as a hypocrite.
Delivering people out of the bondage of mainstream media
and the philosophies of this world.
God has called you and me to be his ambassadors, even in this dark moment. Let's not miss our moment.
And now, the Hamilton Corner.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to the Hamilton Corner here on American Family Radio. A few more days. I am so grateful you've joined the program. Thank you to each and every one of you who are tuning in. Wherever you are, however you are tuning in, thank you for doing so. Podcast listeners, live radio audience listeners, live streamers, live video streamers, television show watchers, or ever you're watching the program, thank you for doing so. There would be no program without you. And so I just want to express my gratitude to you for that, and for, most importantly, for God allowing all of us to have this time here together. At this very moment, many of you, if not most of you, are making your transition from your part-time jobs where you generate an income to your full-time jobs where you cultivate an outcome. And as you do so, I want to remind you to do it with intentionality, understanding the primacy that God places on family as the first of the human institutions that he established. Before there was an order of priests, an order of prophets, modern iterations of civil government. Let me say that again. Modern iterations of civil government. God ordained the family. We are continuing our fast, not only fasting and praying, not only through Election Day, but through the day after, because this is what we need to be focused upon. No matter what happens on November 5th, no matter how long the counting may take, isn't that amazing? You know, people talk about make America healthy again, make America great. How about we make America holy? That's what I would like to see. Make America godly. The heart of Americans turned to the Lord. That's what we need. That is our greatest and most desperate need. As I mentioned, I didn't mention this today yet. I'm Abraham Hamilton III, host of the program, joined by the Corner Contingent. Right across from me, my man 100 grand, Mr. Bobby Rosa. I had to give you three octaves on that one, you know. I had to give a stop and start. We got producer extraordinaire, the real J Mac, often imitated, never duplicated, is in the building. And we got an extra in the screening room. He ain't trying to be on the show, but we got Britt, put him in the basket. Britt put him in the basket, baby. Steph Curry ain't got nothing on him. Talking about Splash Brother. This the Splash Grandpapa. He's hanging out in the screening room, but we're ready to rock and roll with today's edition of the program. Man, God is good. God is good. And his goodness is not contingent upon my perception of it. His goodness is not contingent upon a circumstantial evaluation. God is good because it is intrinsic to his nature. Goodness is who he is. It is who he is. I would implore you to set your course, to cry out to the Lord for our nation. What's going on in your neck of the woods? I'm going to open the phone lines. And the final segment, I want to ask those of you, I know, because we've gotten to the place, we don't have election day anymore. We have election season, you know. And I know many, many, many people have participated in early voting. I just want to get a feel from you where things are. If you have voted, I want to get a sense from you, get a feel from you what you're seeing, where you are. I have a story I'm going to share from one locale that I thought, huh, isn't that convenient? I can already tell you now Bobby's going to turn red. You going to turn red, Bobby? I'm just telling you, get ready. It's going to happen. But let's turn to the Word of God. This verse has been echoing in my heart. Habakkuk chapter 2, verse 14. This one verse, I've explained before a bit of the context. Habakkuk was a prophet who ministered to the southern kingdom of Judah shortly before the Babylonian siege and ultimate conquest and exile transpired. And it is one of the books. It's amazing what the Lord records for our benefit. A dialogue that he has with Habakkuk, started by Habakkuk. You know, he is witnessing the degradation and the spiritual decline and the demonstrable moral decline, the depravity that was rife in Judah at the time. And he began to cry out to the Lord, "Lord, why do you cause my eyes to see? Why do I see all of this? It seems like nobody else is concerned, or at least not many seem to be concerned." And the Lord starts conversing back and forth with Habakkuk in chapter 2. This is as this dialogue is going forward. The Lord has revealed to Habakkuk, "Oh, I see what's going on as well. It's not that I'm slack. I'm just patient. But long suffering is not forever suffering. And there's something coming, and it's coming from Babylon." So he reveals that specifically to Habakkuk. And his revelation to Habakkuk causes, God's revelation to Habakkuk causes him at one point in this prophetic writing to make this remark. If you're watching the show, you already see the verse on your screen. For those who are just listening, I'm going to read it for you. Habakkuk chapter 2, verse 14. And this is what Habakkuk said in light of what God was revealing to him. It was almost like, "Oh my goodness, Lord, I didn't see." And then he says this, Habakkuk chapter 2, verse 14. "For the earth will be filled with the knowledge of the glory of the Lord as the waters cover the sea." "For the earth will be filled with the knowledge of the glory of the Lord as the waters cover the sea." Now, this is something that Habakkuk exclaims in the face of all of what he's witnessing, because God is showing him how he's going to respond. And Habakkuk is in awe of God yet again. And this verse is just echoing in my heart, because it is the truth. The earth will be filled with the knowledge of the glory of the Lord. The question that immediately comes to my heart is whether or not I will be a proponent of this ubiquitous knowledge, or would this ubiquitous knowledge transpire in spite of me? Will I be a part of propounding the knowledge of the Lord to fill the earth as the waters covers the sea? Or will this transpire in spite of me? I have been talking about our response after the election, because no doubt about it, we're at a critical juncture. But I strongly believe one of the major things God is endeavoring to do is to get the attention of the believer, is to capture our attention, to refine and to reformat us to his job one. There are a lot of things we've done in the name of the Lord, but I'm not so sure a lot of the things that the professing body of Christ in America has done in the name of the Lord has actually been ordained by the Lord. We can do a lot of things in his name. There's one thing in particular he said that we are to do. That is to make disciples. Disciple making includes the cultivation of a comprehensive biblical worldview. All of Christ for all of life. And people asking questions, and I'm sickened by the conversation. You know, I was accused the other day, "Hey, you're a one-issue voter. All you care about is unborn babies." I said, "That's not all I care about. But I sure will know and learn a lot about a person if they are callous toward the most vulnerable. I know a lot about a person based on how they perceive the elderly, how you respond to the elderly. How do you navigate the infirmed?" Now, we've talked before about the reality of what is the significance of liberty in the pursuit of happiness if we don't have life. If we don't have life. "Well, hey, but are you equally concerned about," they call it racism, you know, I describe it as skin color-based partiality. Yes, I am equally concerned about skin color-based partiality, but they are not the same in terms of vulnerability. When you're talking about unborn babies, they have no capacity to defend themselves. They have no capacity to start a campaign. They can't lobby their legislators. They can't they can't organize allies. They can do none of that. Those who have been who suffered because of ethnic skin color-based partiality, they have an opportunity to respond. And then you have the question, there are people who are partial, but their partiality can't do nothing to me. I'm not naive enough to think there's nobody that's partial. You know, I had a situation, my wife and I was doing something, we were shopping for something, and it was no doubt the people discounted me because of what we look like. No problem. And what I'm saying, what we look like, I don't know if it was skin color or not. I was very casual. And then I heard some other folks say, hey, do you know what that is? Blah, 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 blah. And then all of a sudden, it's a completely different attitude. But that partiality, yeah. I'll tell you the full story later, Bobby. But the partiality didn't hurt me, is what I'm saying. That was their problem. So, yes, they're equally sinful, but they're not equal in terms of the impact on the people subjugated to those sins. That makes sense? Just like somebody who lies on you is a lot different than somebody who takes a gun and blows your head off. I mean, come on, man. Let's get out of this stupid thinking that it is political partisanship and, dare I say, idolatry, even amongst professing believers, that would have you to say, well, don't you think skin color-based partiality is just as bad as abortion? Equally sinful, yes, but not equal in its impact on the person victimized by it. Because there are a lot of people who are partial, and they just evil and sinful, but they can't hurt me. They can't hurt you. Anyway. But what's happened is that we've allowed, in many instances, and I've been saying this over and over, in many instances, we've allowed our context to manipulate us away from full-throated, robust, foundational commitment to God above all. It's Jesus over everything. Over everything. And it's because of that. No matter what transpires next week, should the Lord tarry and he allows us to continue inhaling and exhaling his oxygen, there is more faithfulness he desires from you and I. Will we be a part of this? For the earth of the Lord will be filled with the knowledge of the glory of the Lord as the waters cover the sea. For the earth will be filled with the knowledge of the glory of the Lord as the waters cover the sea. There's work before us, brothers and sisters. There is much, much, much work to be done. Much of it starts right at home, man. Right at home. Many of you listening to me, you're listening to me now, you know. If we have young children at home, man, that's going to fly by. That time is going to fly by. And we'll wake up one day. And I was talking to my wife. You know, our two oldest children, they're taller than my wife now. 12 and 13 years old. My wife is like 5'5". My 12-year-old daughter and my 13-year-old son, they're both taller than my wife. I had the privilege, when my son turned 13, I took him on a trip, just he and I. And we talked, and I said, son, you realize most of your adolescence is behind you. Your time of being a minority, more of that is behind you than before you. When we talked about the scripture, when I was a child, I thought as a child, I spoke as a child, I reasoned as a child. But now that I'm a man, I put childish things behind me. And he said, Daddy, you know, I never thought of that. I said, son, my job is to train you to be a man. I want you to enjoy your adolescence, but my job is to train you to be a man of God. And so I want to make sure you have a proper framing of where you are in life. You should be aspiring towards maturation. And I'm grateful to testify, man. He's taken that and he's run with that. I got three more boys coming behind him, and I got two girls behind him.
Guiding light into the darkness. This is the Hamilton Corner on American Family Radio.
Welcome back to the Hamilton Corner. Abraham Hamilton III here. Boy, I'm telling you, this has been a presidential election cycle like no other, at least none that I've seen. Oh, Jeff, you got me on the screen looking like I dipped my forehead in Crisco again. Why you ain't tell me my forehead was shiny, man? You ain't say nothing. You let me go on here all shiny. That's how you know people care about you.
Makeup.
You know, you have people, you know, sisters walking around thinking they're looking fly. They got lipstick all in their teeth and nobody telling them anything. And they're just smiling.
Just beaming.
Got all kind of bicuspids discolored and all. Incisors all muddied up. And nobody said a thing. Ma'am. This man let me come on the camera. Look like I dipped my head in some. Boy, I'm telling you, with friends like this, you just look in my forehead, looking like a mirror. You can see your reflection on the screen if you're watching this. Well, it's gonna be shiny now. I don't have a break now. I have to go and wipe my forehead in the break. But no, man, I was talking about this election cycle, and it's hilarious. So yesterday I played the audio, and I showed the video for you of, I played the Hinchcliffe, the roast comedian's joke, you know, as I said yesterday, terrible, terrible decision by the Trump team. It's a joke. It's a bad joke. All right. That's what it is. Then Mr. Robinette, hold my ice cream. The only garbage I see is his supporters. They go, word? So you calling everybody who supports the man garbage. Oh, boy. Well, in the closing, making the closing arguments for this election, President Trump was in Wisconsin, and he had a rally in Green Bay, Wisconsin. I'm sure they're glad they don't have Aaron Rodgers there anymore, but anyway, That's another word. Tell me why. Somebody explain to me why. Why? President Trump rolls up to his rally. He gets off the jet and he hops into a garbage truck. Man, I was drinking some tea when I saw that. I almost spit out my tea. This man is in a vest commonly worn by sanitation engineers. He's in the white garbage truck with Trump on the side. Then he has a press conference from the garbage truck. But that was funny. I'll give you a little glimpse of that. It's clip number one. Clip number one. Go.
How do you like my garbage truck? This truck is in honor of Kamala and Joe Biden.
How do you like my garbage truck? My garbage truck is amazing, the greatest garbage truck I've ever seen. It's in light of Kamala. Is that how you say it, Jeff? Kamala? Camelot? Is it Camelot? Is it Camellia? I don't know. And you won't have to know much longer after the next week. I'll tell you, boy, it's going to be a great day, I'll tell you. Kamala and Joe Biden. He doesn't know where he is. I know he doesn't know where he is. He doesn't know. I don't know. No one cares. I wish him the best, though. I think he doesn't want Kamala to win. He doesn't like her. Very mean, very mean, very nasty. And if you thought that was it, I thought that this man is hilarious. That was funny. I don't care who you are. And I know, they will never admit this, but I know there were some Democrat staffers, some Kamala Harris staffers, they was like, he's done it again. He went to Mickey D's. He then went to the Golden Arches. They sent out the memes talking about Kamala never worked at McDonald's. She worked at McDowell's. They have the Golden Arches. We have the Golden Arcs. He's done it again. And they thought that was it. Oh, no. But wait, there's more. My man took the stage at his rally in Wisconsin wearing the vest. Wearing the vest. Oh, man, this is funny. And then he explained how he came to the decision to wear the vest on stage. Listen to and watch clip number two. Go.
And then I got in the car and I'm driving over here and I have this still on. And I come into the arena and I say, where's my jacket? I want to get out of this thing. And they said, it would be unbelievable if you could wear it on stage. I said, and I said, no way. I got 25,000 people standing outside. I got all these people here. There's no way I'm wearing it on stage. They said, oh, okay, sir. I said, get me my jacket. But if you did, you know, it actually makes you look thinner. I said, oh. And they got me. I said, I want to wear it on stage. When they said I look thinner, I said, in that case, I'll wear it on stage. I may never wear a blue jacket again. I may go in this. I said that. That was the key. Sir, you look thinner. So anyways.
I don't care who you are. That's funny. That's funny. Again, it's a billionaire who's being relatable, self-deprecating. You know? That's funny. And it just again shows such a stark contrast because I'm not even going to have to say it. Let's just say she has a difficult time relating to people regularly. She might have started out, well, I wore this because I grew up in a middle-class family. That was funny. He said, ooh, it makes me look thinner. That was the case. Oh, my goodness. That was funny. That was just funny. All right. Moving on. This is the part of the program where Bobby turns red. We should probably offer someone a lower third. And this portion of the program is brought to you by Bobby's face changing shades of color. He's like, why are you saying? I know. He doesn't know what I'm about to say. Colorado. Heard of that place? Yeah, that's a state. Yeah, nothing big happened there except Colorado Secretary of State inadvertently, she would say, her name is Jenna Griswold, Secretary of State Jenna Griswold, has said inadvertently, this was not intentional, Mr. Rosa, calm down. She inadvertently posted passwords to all 64 counties' voting machines on the website, on the web. And it's been there for a month. And in fact, the passwords for voting machines, I'm sorry, did I say 64 counties? 63 of the 64 counties in Colorado. They've been up on the web for over a month. Yeah. That's a great question. Bobby asked, why are the voting machines connected to the web? Well, the machines aren't. Well, I don't know if they are or they're not. But what was posted is spreadsheet data that includes the passwords to access the voting machines. Listen to and watch this report from local news in Colorado. It is clip number three. Go.
Passwords for Colorado's voting systems were posted online for anyone to see for months, if you knew where to look. Democratic Secretary of State Jenna Griswold's office apparently posted them online by accident. Griswold's office found out last Thursday and had not told the county clerks who actually run elections. Then the Colorado Republican Party went public today, demanding that Griswold secure those voting machines. Here's Marshall Zellinger.
The Colorado Secretary of State's office is required to maintain a spreadsheet of certified voting systems for each county. That's this list. At the bottom of any spreadsheet, you can have multiple tabs. You can also hide a tab. But if you post the raw spreadsheet to a public website, apparently anyone can also unhide the tab. This happened and apparently revealed one set of passwords for voting computers in Colorado. Next confirmed this with the Secretary of State's office today, but we learned about it this morning in an email blast from the Colorado Republican Party. The passwords had been up for months without it being known.
Didn't that give you the warm and fuzzies? Not laughing because it's funny. Not laughing because it's funny. And they wonder why people say, why don't we use paper ballots? So, and again, I am not going to endeavor to determine what was in Secretary of State Griswold's heart when her office posted this information to the website, to the web. But it's been on the web for over 2 months. And the thing that's wild, when her office learned about it, they didn't even tell the elections office, didn't say anything. And it took the Republican Party in the state to publicize the information to get them to respond. Anybody who knows how to work Excel knows how to hit unhide for fields that are available. Of course, with no forthcoming from the Secretary of State's office, it took the state Republican Party to bring this issue to light for Colorado voters. But once the issue is brought to light, the Secretary of State's office says, oh, yeah. But this leaked information does not pose, this is the quote from their response in writing, quote, does not pose an immediate security threat to Colorado's elections. Does not pose a threat. That's what they say, Bobby. Doesn't pose a threat. They went on to explain that the voting machines in the state of Colorado and all of the counties, they require two passwords to access. The passwords are kept in separate places. There was only one of the two passwords necessary to access each machine, and you have to have two passwords and someone to access them in person in order to access them. You know, I hope that's true. I genuinely hope that it's true. But are we supposed to just take their word for it? Is there not a way to confirm whether or not that is true? And these things, it, and I'm about to play something next for you from Colorado. I mean, this dude went after Secretary of State Griswold. He literally called for her to resign on the air. Literally. And this reporter, I don't know his politics. But things like this happen all too often on Secretary of State's Griswold's watch. I don't feel good. If I was a Coloradan, I don't feel good knowing that the voting machines to every county's voting machine, except one, 63 out of 64, it's been on the web for months. And I'm supposed to just, oh, sure, it was just coinkiting. That's kind of a big deal, isn't it? Well, this reporter, he was none too pleased. I think it said his name, Kyle. We'll have his name in a moment, but he was not pleased with Secretary of State Griswold. Listen to his interesting interview, a portion of it, with the Secretary of State. It's clip number four. Clip number four, go.
A final question. This is not the first time that your office has made mistakes that have damaged voters' confidence in our elections. In 2022, your office sent out mailers to 30,000 non-citizens inviting them to register to vote. They, of course, are not eligible to register to vote. That same year, your office used Colorado's ballot tracking system to send messages to specific Coloradans encouraging them to vote when, in fact, they had already voted, causing confusion that had to be cleaned up by the county clerks. And now this leak of the voting system passwords.
given your office's repeated errors that have damaged confidence in our elections, which you say is paramount, will you resign?
Absolutely not, Kyle.
That's kind of bad. So in 2024, her office is posting the passwords in her mind, one out of two. One, according to her, one out of the two passwords. Kyle Clark, thank you. That's the name of the reporter, Kyle Clark. One out of the two passwords for every machine is posted online for months. Then this same Secretary of State, her office in 2022, that wasn't that long ago, sent mailers to 30,000 non-citizens. Kind of reminds me of Virginia, huh? What is this thing about asking non-citizens to vote? Her office sent mailers to 30,000 non-citizens in Colorado asking them to vote when they cannot vote in the state. And then not only that, her same office sent messages to voters saying, hey, y'all go vote when they'd already voted. I know we have listeners in Colorado. Are y'all trusting Secretary of State Griswold at this point? This is and you wonder why people have concerns. Yet for having these concerns, Goebbels Inc. will have you say, oh, you're a conspirator. Well, you tell me where's the conspiracy when you learn that your county's voting machines have had the passwords to access your machines on the website, on the web, for months. That wouldn't make me feel warm and cozy. Not at all.
The Hamilton Quarter podcast and 1 minute commentaries are available at AFR.net. Back to the Hamilton Quarter on American Family Radio.
Welcome back to the Hamilton Corner. Melody on the live stream had a great point. Colorado Secretary of State Jenna Griswold is the same Secretary of State Griswold that led the effort to try to get President Trump disqualified from the ballot. Remember that? Those lawsuits started in Colorado. Oh, Jenna Griswold, she can't even keep the voting machines passwords off the web. That is, oh man. Ooh, boy. We're going to open the phone lines this segment. The number to call is 888-589-8840. That number again is 888-589-8840. What I want to converse with you about, specifically those of you who have voted already, you know, I'm not a fan of early voting, frankly. I'm like, what is the necessity to do it? Like, I understand if you're going to be away. That's why we have the absentee ballot process. You know, the absentee ballot process is available for every American. But election is a kind of an important part of our civic engagement and civic responsibility. You know, I'm not the most chronologically seasoned person in the world, but I can remember employers allowing their employees to take off as they needed to go and vote because Election Day is such a big deal, you know. But the people who consistently advocate for more and more and more days, more and more and more days, more and more and more days, they tend to have a particular, shall I say, leaning, to say it that way. But it's crazy. But that aside, I certainly am not casting aspersions on anybody who has participated in your state's decision to make voting available to you before November 5th. So what I want to know is, what was your experience and what did things look like on the ground where you were? The number to call is 888-589-8840. That number again is 888-589-8840. If you want to tell me, if you want to talk to me about what's going on in your neck of the woods concerning voting, your experience, what things are like in your hometown, your home area, I would love to hear from you. 888-589-8840 is the number to call. In the meantime, boy, this is something. And now I got Jeff, I'm asking to do two things at once. Maybe we put up the Shapley letter, if you can, before we have to deal with this problem. So the name Gary Shapley, for some of you, that might ring a bell. Some of you are like, Gary Shapley. I know that name for some reason. Oh, yes. Gary Shapley is the original of the two IRS whistleblowers that came out and revealed that some fishy stuff going on with the Biden family. It's Shapley's testimony before Congress that led to the entire cascading effect that resulted ultimately in Hunter Biden's prosecution. He was like, wait a minute. They're not treating him like they've treated other people. They slow walked a lot of the financial penalties that could have directly connected him to Mr. Joseph Robinette Biden to make sure that the statute of limitations had run on some of those issues. It is his testimony along with another one, Joe Ziegler's testimony, that led to the ultimate prosecution where the gun charges were filed against Hunter Biden, and he's pled guilty to some tax evasion crimes in California, but those are some of the milder of the ones he could have been charged with. Well, Gary Shapley was hit with a letter from his very own Department of the Treasury. Now, remember, Gary Shapley is a senior agent in the IRS agency. He received a letter. If you're watching the program, the letter is on the screen before you, dated October 15th, where Gary Shapley was given three options concerning his future. And you'll see on the second page the three paragraphs where you fill in the bubble, you know, like you in kindergarten. In the letter, Mr. Shapley was informed that he has three options for his future. Either one, leave his post as a supervisory special agent in Chicago and accept a demotion and a pay cut to take a job as a senior analyst in Washington. That's the first option. The second option is to take another demotion or another another reassignment to a position as a criminal investigator within the IRS. Or his third option, resign and retire. That's the three options that he had. Move, be demoted, take a pay cut, or resign and retire. Now, the IRS is insisting this has nothing to do with him being a whistleblower concerning Biden. In the letter, the IRS conveyed to Mr. Shapley that this ultimatum is portrayed as, quote, a diversity program for the development of future leaders and the continued growth, success, and sustainability of our organization. The letter continues, quote, the mobility of our leaders will showcase diversity of thought, breadth of experience, and technical and interpersonal expertise for a successful future. Mr. Rosa, are you buying that? Bobby says, what happened to the No Fear Act? This is the federal legislation that is supposed to protect federal whistleblowers. In response, Mr. Shapley's attorney said that this personnel ultimatum is nothing more than a continued form of retaliation that began more than a year ago when the agent has been passed over for not one, not two, not three, but four promotions since he became a whistleblower. And this is why, and I said this when Mr. Shapley came out, guys, it took a lot of courage for him to come out publicly with this. Because he will inevitably face retaliation. And Mr. Shapley and his attorney are saying this is clear evidence of that happening. None of this was no problem. I was continuously promoted, moving up the ranks to the point to where I became the high-level special agent that I was. But since I blew the whistle on the Biden crime family, now all of a sudden, Now diversity requires for me to be moved. And, oh yeah, so you to demote me, reduce my pay. Thankfully, he has legal representation. But I want you to see, and the main reason why I wanted to show you the letter itself as well, because I want you to see that this is what happens, guys. If you're talking about corruption, if whistleblowers are not going to face retaliation, then what do you call this? And of course, they're going to say, oh, yeah, no, there's not retaliation, sure. Which the most obvious question and the most obvious assessment would be, well, compare the trajectory of his career before he became a whistleblower concerning crack-smoking Hunter. That still blows my mind. Got a crackhead dude, and then crack is found in the White House, and geez, I don't know who had though. Who could have had the crack? I don't know. We need Matlock on this one. Oh, and by the way, the baggie that the cocaine was in, we don't know what happened. It just got destroyed. Guys, this is evidence of corruption, man. And so that, this is happening. When you put all of these things together, man, it's the same types of things that happen over and over and over again. It kind of conveys a pattern of behavior. To the phone lines we go. We will start in Kansas, where Larry is on the line. Larry, thank you for calling the Hamilton Corner. Welcome to the program.
Well, thank you for taking my call. I sure appreciate and really love your program. It's one of the best programs on the radio.
Thank you for that, Larry. I really appreciate that. Go right ahead. What was your experience?
Well, mine was really good. I live in a small town, and the population not very big here in Kansas, so we were able to get right in to vote, no problem. We went very smoothly, actually. And the reason I voted early was because I'm working the polls that day, and I think we're going to be real busy.
Yeah. Well, thank you for doing that, Larry. Thank you for working the polls as well. And thank you for calling. You have a great, great day. All righty. We'll go next to Texas, where Rachel is on the line. Rachel, thank you for calling the Hamilton Corner. Welcome to the program.
Yes, thank you very much, sir, for all that you are doing. I appreciate it. Please, I was listening to Dennis Prager today, and he was really concerned about the stance of African Americans with Kamala Harris. And I couldn't get a chance to speak. So I want to tell you as an African sister that, one, God used ordinary people to deliver a nation from Genesis to Revelation. He used Joseph, Daniel, Esther, and the rest of them. The 12 were fishermen, were ordinary men. So I have something to say as a sister from Africa. Thank God that Elon Musk has jumped in. Concerning abortion, Kamala Harris cannot win this election with abortion. I am saying it over and over to any black that is hearing me. I am a black sister from continent of Africa. Why I'm saying that is that she cannot, seeing the population of blacks in this country and the population of Hispanic, she as a black woman cannot stand up to tell blacks to abort babies. That is number one. Number two, I'm talking straight to the church. The church is the bride of Christ. If the church does not rise up at this time, that is what Mordecai told Esther. Do not sit and be comfortable in your position. Don't be silent at this time. The church must rise up and speak because of the babies that they are killing and sacrificing. It is the same playbook of Jezebel.
Thank you very much, Rachel. Playbook. Thank you. Thank you very much. I thought Rachel was going to talk about her voting experience. But, she's trying. Kamala Harris is certainly trying to sell abortion. And it's always remarkable to me that it's the agenda that Margaret Sanger sought, particularly to annihilate what she called the weeds. The weeds, which were people who are minorities, but also people who had certain physical deformities, people who had mental challenges. And it was eugenics, frankly. And so to use that as a campaign, and I thought it was funny, and I debated whether or not even would play this audio because Rachel mentioned about Kamala Harris being black, but she finally admitted that she's not black. She said that she's by love. She was on the Shannon Sharp podcast. She said her mom, her Indian mother, you had family who are your biological relatives. Those are the ones who are you related to without your choice. Then you have those who you become family by love, you see. That's what she said, by love. And so her mother put her in relationship with people who by love she claimed as aunties and uncles, but they weren't biologically related to her. I was like, what in the Rachel Dolezal is going on here? So by that standard, Rachel Dolezal, Rachel Dolezal is just as authentic as anybody else. But thank you so much, Rachel, for your call and for your comments. We'll go next to Georgia, where Barbara is on the line. Barbara, thank you for calling the Hamilton Corner. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. Well, I voted early. I voted last week. We have several weeks now to vote early. Why do I like it? I like it because I've been in those polls when a storm suddenly showed up at 7 o'clock in the morning and you couldn't even get out of the house for the deluge of rain. I've been out there when all of a sudden the computer stopped working and it might be 90 degrees outside. And so you're standing in line, right? So I really like the early voting. I like the fact that Georgians take advantage of it. You know, I heard somewhere this week that we've already voted 3 million people. Mm-hmm. So
yeah,
that is really good. And I like it because now when I go in, it's only like 10 or 20 people and the lines go fast. It's almost like a drive-through, you know, where you drive up, they check your ID, they check your signature electronically now, and then you get your ballot, you walk over, you make your entries, they print it out.
All right, I got to stop right there because you can hear the disrespectful music like I can. You say it's like a drive-through. Now, you do know, Barbara, not all drive-throughs are the same. When you say it's like a drive-through, are we talking Chick-fil-A drive-through or are we talking about Popeyes on Orleans and Claiborne? And now I'm not casting aspersions on anybody else's experiences. And you mentioned the machines and things of that nature. And this is why some people say, why don't we use paper ballots? What's the problem with that? We can have digital assistants to count, but why don't we have tangible ballots? We wouldn't have to worry about machines. Nevertheless, I know we have a bunch of people holding. I'm so sorry we couldn't get to you. Lord willing, we'll try to get some folks in next time we open the phone lines.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.